Welcome to Holden Village. Today in the Fireside Room, Bob Stivers will be speaking on gay and lesbian ordination. So let's listen in on Bob Stivers.
This is a case having to do with, what's the name of the church? Shepherd Presbyterian Church, a church which is located, according to the text, in Tucson, Arizona. Shepherd is pastored by Elaine Campbell, who has been previously in the sanctuary movement. Those of you who have been listening to the sessions on the sanctuary movement are probably aware of that. The sanctuary movement was an effort to house people who were fleeing the violence of Central America, legally and illegally. Elaine has been the pastor there for a while. I don't know if it was before she came or after she came, the congregation nominated for ordination. Let me just provide some background at this point. The Presbyterian Church has two kinds of ordination. They're really the same thing, but they distinguish between ministers of the word, or pastors, and elders, who are lay people ordained to office, to serve on the ruling body of the Presbyterian Church is the session. So what had happened was, early on, was that from the floor, a gay man, presumably self-affirming and actively gay, Morris West, was nominated for the floor and elected to serve on the session, and Elaine proceeded to ordain him. In the Presbyterian Church, the national body of the Presbyterian Church, the General Assembly, has on numerous occasions said that ordination, either to the ministry of the word, to pastors or to elders, is against the rules of the church. And presumably, if someone wanted to prosecute the case before church courts, that person could be removed from the session. He was elected, and the local governing bodies between the congregation and the General Assembly took no action. They did not respond adversely. Probably they just wanted to let it ride. Everyone can read between the lines. Subsequently, someone in the church, wasn't clear who that person was, put a resolution up, which I have written on the board, which says that Shepherd Presbyterian Church will not exclude any active member from election or ordination to office on the basis of race, class, gender, or sexual orientation. For the purposes of this case, the term sexual orientation is the key one. Sexual orientation is a word which not everybody, a phrase that not everybody subscribes to, but a lot of research has been done to suggest that some people, for whatever reasons and the causes are not clear. They have been suggestions from genetic to cultural. Probably homosexual orientation is a very complex thing that we certainly little understand it, whether it's complex or not. And whatever the case may be, that appears that some people have an orientation to people of the same sex rather than to people of the other sex, which is a more statistically a more common occurrence. In fact, a very small percentage of human beings apparently have this sexual orientation. The numbers vary, but it's way below 5%, probably in the category of 1-3% are exclusively homosexual in orientation, with another some percentage being bisexual. In any case, this issue came before the church, and as the case closes, this resolution is up for vote on the session. And in the intervening time between the presentation of this motion and the moment at the end of the case when the vote is to be taken, there has been considerable discussion, may I say discussion, considerable controversy in the church on whether they should pass this resolution. Now, one other thing, sexual orientation means that you're oriented, but not necessarily active. There's a distinction that we're talking about here between orientation, which is attraction to the other sex, but one could be celibate. And the churches so far have found no problem with that kind of orientation. It's the practice and the affirmation of the practice. As we know, many pastors, many ordained people are in fact gay and actively gay, but they remain so-called in the closet. They do not reveal their sexual orientation and activity. So this refers to people who are, as the Presbyterian Church put it elsewhere, self-affirming and active. That is, they have declared their orientation and practice and are engaging in it. And this is the situation that is involved here, because two gay people in the congregation have reached places of responsibility.
That's what I wanted to know. The ordination that they speak of isn't to be a pastor.
No.
It's just to be an elder.
In the Presbyterian Church, elders are ordained.
Yeah.
And an elder is anyone who has in the past or now serves on the session, which is the ruling council of a church.
Like the church council
in the Lutheran Church. But in the Presbyterian polity, that's ordained. And the ordination is considered the same, but really, there in practice, there's kind of two classes that exist. Is everybody clear about the facts in the case, even though you haven't read it? Is there anything more I need to summarize or explain? Okay. I have put on the board behind me a wheel. I've done that purposely because there are a number of characters in this case who say different things. And before we get into general discussion, I think it would be helpful to review what some of these people have to say. I also drew it purposely as a circle with spokes to indicate that we are, as we do ethics, people who are in a web or a hub of, at the hub of many, many relationships. And this is what makes ethics often so difficult, is that while we have general guidelines which apply to all situations, applying them to specific situation is often very difficult. Situational peculiarities, make the application of general norms to specific situations very difficult. And in this case, Nan, who is the main character in the case, is kind of the hub of the discussion, is in a rather large web of people, what would you call it, telling him what their opinions are in no uncertain terms in some cases. And he is the one who at the end has got to decide whether he will vote. I will ask you at the end perhaps to vote on this to see how you stand and reveal. I have kept votes on this for about 12 or 13 times I've run the case. And the vote itself, at least the history of it, is rather revealing. I'll share that with you as we go along. So the web of relationships in this case is rather complex, and that makes for a unique situation. What I'd like to do, those of you who have books, I'd like to review what some of the characters say individually, because in one way or another, each of the characters presents one of the a position affirming or denying this resolution. And the reasons they give are ones that one typically hears. I did this case, by the way, before about 100 people at a church in Olympia, Washington, that was facing exactly this issue. And the church was about evenly divided. That was probably the most interesting example I've ever had of this, doing this case. Okay, let me look. I would like to call your attention. I'm going to call your attention to the most important of these, and then I will present their position, and then have you discuss what you think of that position. The first, and the one I think that is most significant in terms of theology, is the one presented on the third page of the case. I say third page because there's different numbers and different volumes, by Patty Becker. Can you find Patty Becker about a third of the way down your volume? I'll read what she has to say and see what you think. Patty Becker had called to say, she's talking to Chandler, she was concerned about her children. This is not good modeling. The Bible, and here's the relevant one I want you to reflect on, the Bible calls homosexuality a sin. I have young children and I don't want to teach them that it isn't. Look how unhappy those people are. We used to be a family-oriented church, but there's very little emphasis on children or family relationships anymore. Whatever happened to the Ten Commandments? Isn't there anything right or wrong anymore? Have we reached the point where anything you want to do is acceptable? Okay, that's a commonly heard position. And the heart of, there are many things said about modeling and children and family orientation, which we may want to continue to discuss, but the heart of it is that this is a statement that homosexuality is sin, and that's exactly what the Bible says. What do you think about that statement?
Well, parts of it Jesus didn't even mention.
Let me ask a prior question. What is sin? That's an old. Someone wrote a book a few years ago with the title "Whatever Happened to Sin?" You know, everyone's sort of thrown that way to the side. The New Yorker, the London Times once said that sin is the most empirically verifiable Christian doctrine there is. Kind of like that. What is sin in the Christian understanding?
There are different types of sins. Wrong preaching is also a sin.
What is a sin?
There are different types of sins. Wrong preaching is also a sin.
Okay, wrong preaching, by the very use of the word wrong, indicates probably that it's sinful. Well, what does sin mean? What is it? What does it mean?
It seems like in the Presbyterian Church they used to call it anything that's an abomination to God.
Anything that's an abomination to God, okay.
Stealing is sin.
Is stealing always sin? If you're a young mother that has no income and three children and you have no support and you steal bread from the local store, is that a sin? To feed your children?
Man, if it is excused, if his clothes doesn't mind being stolen, sometimes it's okay.
Well, then it's not a sin.
In
the eyes of the law. So there is, on the one hand, a legal understanding of sin, which is what? Whenever the rules or the laws get broken, one sins. How do you feel about that definition or understanding? Is that right?
Well, you've broken the law, not necessarily sin.
It's just a broken law.
It's a broken law.
What about the Ten Commandments?
Whenever you break the Ten Commandments, do you sin? The other day we had a discussion the other day about thou shalt not kill. Soldiers kill in wartime all the time. Are they sinning?
Yes, their government is sinning in a millennium there.
Oh, maybe, okay.
God told the government, go out and kill people. Yeah. With the same breath that he said, don't kill.
Right, so I guess that's God sins then, huh?
I just feel that the definition of sin is turning away from God.
Okay, you have a more, you're being this. There's a conflict here in the churches between understandings.
Yeah.
One is a fairly legal, moral definition. Whenever you disobey the rules, the other, I would suggest, has been said in different ways, what is an abomination or God, but I would take it more generally, it's understood as that which breaks relationships.
Mm-hmm.
To God, to other people, to the self. One can sin against the self. I'll lose integrity, for those of you who were in the initial discussion of integrity, and I would add now, one can sin against nature, too. So it's what breaks relationships in the second understanding. And one of the problems that bedevils the church on this is that we have these two different understandings of sin. The one, if you take the legal definition and you interpret the Bible in a certain way, leads almost automatically to a negative opinion regarding homosexuality. The other is much more open. If sin is what breaks relationships, then heterosexuality and homosexuality are in the same boat. That is, some actions of heterosexuality as homosexuality are sinful, and some are not. It depends upon the relationships that are involved. Is that clear? Now, I don't know which you feel more at home with in terms of your understanding, but I'm trying to lay the framework here. Now, what does the Bible say? Now, even if you take either one of these, the Christian church says that the Bible is a guideline. depending on your denomination and your own theology, it may be a stronger or a weaker guideline, but every Christian affirms that somehow the Bible is a guideline and a source of ethical guidance. Some say it is the only source, and it's a legal source. It's binding in all situations. Do you know what the Bible has to say about homosexuality?
Well, isn't it only in Sodom and Gomorrah?
The one place where it's mentioned is Sodom and Gomorrah. What's that story? Can you tell us that story?
No, I really can't tell you the story, except that I thought it was interesting when I read that, when I read in here that it spoke of gang rape.
Yeah.
Rather than individual relationships.
Mm-hmm. What occurs in Sodom and Gomorrah, as you well know, is God has this conversation with, who is it?
Lot.
No, it's not with Lot. It was before the story, with Abraham or somebody. And is there one good man and one good person, that says man, in Sodom? And they first start out with, if 50, will you save the city? And again, finally they have a compromise that's down to 10. So God sends a couple angels to Sodom. And Lot, who is a good man, according to the text, and we'll have reason to question that as we read the text, offers them hospitality. And during the evening, the men of Sodom, to a man, surround the house or come to the front of the house and demand to have sex with the angels. And Lot protects them, and as the men become a little more aggressive in their attitudes, I think they're struck down. Or before that, Lot, and this is one of the interesting parts of the story, offers his two daughters to the men of Sodom, saying that they've never had sex before, but you can have my daughters if you save the, my sojourners that are with me. But they demand to have the men. And as a result of this activity, Sodom is, you know, the famous story where Sodom, where Lot and his family are leaving, and Lot's wife looks back and is turned into a pillar of salt. Well, Lot himself escapes with his two daughters, and then the two daughters get him drunk in a cave and have sex with him, so that there's incest involved with Lot. I mean, I don't know how they describe this guy as good, but anyway.
How can they have sex with the angels?
Well, I don't know. That story doesn't tell us that. But
so the sin is having sex with angels.
Well, the question is, what is sin? People commonly interpreted the story to mean that homosexuality is sin in the story. What is sinful in the story? Other people have suggested that it's not, it's gang rape in this situation. Gang rape's a sin. And secondly, that some other people have suggested that what's being violated isn't so much the sexual taboos as is the safety of strangers in your midst. It's a strange story, whatever way you look at it.
Well, sin wouldn't have been any less if it was a gang of women.
Yeah. What is the sin in this situation is not altogether clear, but Sodom has always been associated with sodomy, which is anal intercourse, and has been considered the essence of the story. Whether or not that's true, that has been a fairly long interpretation. As scholars look at this, they raise strong issue with what it is that the story is talking about. Leviticus has two places which talks about homosexuality. Does any of you know that? It's Leviticus 20, 18 and 20. Where is it? Well, that's, and that usually isn't cited in these cases because it's unclear. There is some hint in there that there might have been a homosexual relationship, but it's not altogether clear. In Leviticus, it says two places it says homosexuality is an abomination, but both of those places are found in the holiness code, which are the perfection, and it also has some strange rules which we don't apply anymore. Such as not having sexual intercourses with a menstruating woman, which appears in both cases right before the condemnation of homosexuality. Furthermore, we don't know exactly what kind of homosexuality was being referred to. Some people suggest that what the Israelites were experiencing was the temple prostitution, both heterosexual and homosexual, of the rival Canaanites. Yeah, Albert?
And if you eat pork and you're homosexual, you're deadly abominable.
If what?
If you what?
If you eat pork and you're homosexual.
Yeah. Yeah, eating pork's an abomination as well.
And insects.
Again, here becomes what makes for sin is that when the Bible says it is an abomination, is that a kind of legal rule like a Ten Commandment? It is true, however, that the Hebrew tradition has consistently condemned, up until the modern era, has consistently condemned homosexuality. In the New Testament, there's two or three places. Paul refers to it as a perversion of nature, using what's called natural law. We'll get to that in the natural law argument. Any case, the Bible has six or seven places which are not positive about homosexuality. They're somewhat unclear about what is being described. In Paul's description in Romans and Corinthians, in the Romans text, it's not clear what he was referring to. We know that Corinth was a town with rather shaky morals, being a port city. Was he referring to the rather loose moral conditions there, or all homosexuality? And the word used in Corinthians is the Greek word arsenikoi, and it admits of several translations. It's not altogether clear that it's homosexuality. That's the biblical record, pretty much. It's not a major topic. Probably because it wasn't a problem.
One of the things is that wasn't the Greek civilization, wasn't there a lot of homosexuality in that? So yep. That this would be a reaction to that.
It could well be, or at least Paul, who was Jewish and by birth.
And weren't the Hebrews from the beginning supposed to procreate?
Yes, and that may have been part of the anti-homosexual. And there was, in the biblical times, no knowledge of what homosexuality was about. We are a little bit better informed today, I think. But again, as I said at the outset, it's not all clear what makes a person have a homosexual orientation as contrasted to a heterosexual orientation. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the biblical record. What do you make of her? How would you, what would you say to, what's her name?
Patty
Becker. What would you say to Patty Becker that homosexuality is sin and the Bible says it is? Which is one of the bedrock perspectives that is taken by certain groups of Christians. What's your perspective on that?
I guess that you end up with kind of mixed feelings. Obviously, the biblical aspect is rather vague. As a role model, I guess it has to be of some concern to parents. So you're kind of ambivalent on
what's the concern to parents?
That their children will be exploited, I think.
Oh, that
however,
is.
However, I used to feel. That my kids might be safer with a homosexual teacher than a heterosexual teacher.
Oh, that's interesting. Sometimes heterosexuals don't follow very well.
That's true.
They're not safe either with the homosexual teacher.
Except that I heard enough about problems in school with male teachers with girls in the class. That I thought, gee,
live,
I think if they had a woman,
then how about the male teachers with the boys in the class if you have a homosexual teacher?
Well, I'm just telling you how I felt at the time. I'm not answering your question because I can't answer your question.
I think we have to be pretty respectful of Patty's feelings and her concerns, but at the same time, I think we have to acknowledge that Jesus taught us and told us to love. And so we have to work with her to find a way so that she can accept this person as a person and separate the person from the sexual orientation.
Implicit in what you've said is a certain understanding of sin. I would point out, are you, that sin is not breaking the rules, but breaking love.
There must have something
I'm working on that, on that distinction.
Okay.
Well, in our church, we had a young boy, very, very talented boy, from a family that was very active in the church, and all the rest of the children were heterosexual. This boy was homosexual. It wasn't his choice. It was the way he was born.
Homosexuals claim that they're like heterosexuals in that if you ask if you're a heterosexual, I don't know what anyone's orientation here is, and that's not my business here. But they claim it's like heterosexuals discovering all of a sudden they're heterosexual. At some point did you choose to be heterosexual? Most heterosexuals would say, no, I don't choose that. It's just the way I am.
Yeah. Well, that's what the medical profession says, too, of course, being a nurse, that's the way we were taught, that's the way they're born. They can't help the fact that that's how their orientation is. Mm-hmm. And this boy, like I said, he was very talented, he was very accepted by everybody in the church, and because he'd been accepted for so long, they were shocked when they found that he was a homosexual. But to my knowledge, most of the church still accepted him. And however, he asked to have a minister who he had talked to when he was having all of his, knew what was happening to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't happy with it, but that's the way he was, and he couldn't fight it any longer. He talked to the minister, and he said, if I get AIDS and die, will you preach my service? Well, he got AIDS, and he died. And the whole congregation turned out, and one of the songs that he had written, he was a very talented musician too, was played at his
touching story.
There must have some regard for There must have some regard for sex and not exhibit their weaknesses in the classes of the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
They should be trained first for that.
Yeah, I think that's right. Let me come back here though for a second.
Mm-hmm.
What would a person who might be against this thing say to you with regard to the question of orientation and discovery of it? What's the response that they make to that, you know?
Oh, well, there's this program, there's no such thing. That's just what they
Well, that's one response.
Another one is that you can train them out of it somehow.
Yeah.
Cure them of it.
Okay, that's second. One is that it is a choice. It's not an orientation, but a choice. That's the claim of other people. And since we really don't know what caused it, that claim at least has some persuasiveness to certain people. Second is that they should go, maybe it's like a psychological disease, they go to the shrink or they pray hard enough, God enters their lives, they will be changed, their orientation would be changed. The statistics on that are very weak. The people who have exclusive orientations do apparently not change, though there are some people who do. Whether they're bisexual or actually changed by choice, that's not clear. Of course, we do know that some people are bisexual. There's a third response, which is what?
You saw it.
Yeah, that's the, say, okay, yeah, there is a homosexual orientation. I'm sorry you got it, but be celibate, like, and that's, you're not practicing. It's the practice that's the problem, not the orientation.
But there again, you could go to that, look at all of the, well, the priests who are supposed to be celibate, or anyone else. And they have a very rough time of it, too.
That's right.
We had priests, I'm not a Catholic, but I worked in the Catholic hospital. We had numerous priests and nuns who were alcoholics. Mm-hmm. We had nuns who had abortions.
You have priests that are homosexual, you have priests who engage in heterosexual conduct, and there are a lot of priests who remain celibate.
Mm-hmm.
And nuns.
So they have just as hard. I wrote a hole.
That's right. Oh, that's true. Yes.
Well, if you're born that way, and you somehow won't even get married, and then the marriage, because but I feel everyone is entitled to someone to love and to be loved by someone.
Mm-hmm. Whether regard.
If they had a choice.
to be homosexual or to be straight. I think most people would choose to be straight. But if you're born one way, it's just like being born crippled. You're crippled, so make the best of it.
Except homosexuals would respond that it's not a crippling.
No, but I say that it is a flaw in nature as we look at it now.
Well, again, homosexuals don't call it a flaw.
No, I know, but the straight people do.
Some straight people do.
Yeah, but I still think that everyone is entitled to be treated as a whole person and to be loved by one person, to live a life.
That's an important ethical principle.
Yes, I object to them making such a vow about it, but that's the way they have to do to get recognition, I guess.
Okay. Yes.
I don't understand how you can be taught that you were born that way. I can't understand that.
I don't understand why you can't understand that. Were you, maybe you were born heterosexual. Did you choose that?
Well, it seems to me that way God created men and women, why would it be possible to be born the other way?
All right, now let's...
I'm not being... I really want to know because I can't...
This is the second time this particular way of approaching it has come up. It's called the natural law argument.
It's helpful to compare that with asking a similar question in a different situation, like with the Harold Kushner video. And we can say, well, God ordained something that we think we understand by reading Genesis, but then horribly deformed children are born. And we don't want to say, yeah, how do you respond to that? And,
well,
and we don't understand. That's the thing. We really don't.
Are you clear what the natural, this is, again, one of the most powerful arguments used and by those who would vote against this, is to say that God has ordained a certain way of doing things in nature. And this has been a particularly Roman Catholic way of discussion on a whole number of topics. God has ordained, by the way God built into nature, a certain pattern of things. We can discover that pattern with the use of our minds. That's why God gave us rationality. And when we explore, according to this argument, the sexuality, we see that there's a complementarity between sex which produces children. And that is, according to this perspective, natural. And that's basically what you're arguing. Therefore, anything, the ethical twist comes, therefore, anything which violates what God's intentions for sexuality, which in this case is procreation or the love between male and female, complementary, is against God's will. Hence, homosexuality is against God's will. Is so, the logic of the argumentation.
So what happens with birth control?
Well, that's why the Roman Catholic Church is against birth control. Because it breaks what God intends is for the practice of heterosexuality.
Well, but the Catholic Church is inconsistent in that as well. And the fact that they recommend the rhythm system as a method of birth control is to admit that all acts of sex are not procreative and not intended to be procreative.
Well, the Roman Catholic Church has also widened its understanding of heterosexuality to include sexuality as an aspect of a love between two people. So there's two elements to the Roman Catholic perspective, but still anything that upsets it, I understand what you're saying.
In those areas too, there's another old question that keeps coming up again and again, and that's the question of technology and how technology interferes with what we think is natural or changes it. I mean, people were saying man wasn't meant to fly, so as soon as we have airplanes, we're going against the will of God. I have a tendency to believe that, actually.
Well, the other retort is God gave us the brains to uncover the principles of flight. Why not use them?
Are you running into like life support, extraordinary life support? It's a similar question.
Let's not get into that. That's a whole other discussion.
One of the things that just always it just seems an irony is that so many of the people who are just so dead set against homosexuals sort of laugh off the ladies' man, who a man who is unfaithful to his wife and goes around and sleeping with.
Well, the church does, and it's clear that
the church's
prescription word on that is. But let's get back to what's natural. Is heterosexuality natural? That's the question. There's problems with natural law arguments. Let me just say one of them is the natural law argument presupposes that human rationality can figure out what's natural. The Protestants have always had trouble with the Roman Catholic argument precisely this point. If rationality is fallen, then we're looking at nature with a fallen mind. Can we indeed rely on what we prescribe? Indeed, the Roman Catholic Church over the centuries has declared certain things natural, which in one era appeared to them to be unnatural, and then later eras they've had to retract. For example, usury, that is, taking money at interest, that was considered against natural law. Money doesn't beget money. And then, of course, we discovered that you can't have a very good economic system without loans. Ammo. The reversal came. Now, what is natural and unnatural?
Well, one of the things that people have a problem with is that homosexuality is represented in the animal kingdom as well.
That's true. There's some animals that practice homosexuality.
There were, for centuries also, the argument was that sexual intercourse itself is evidence of the fall, and that in their pristine state, Adam and Eve didn't do it. So you don't really get away from the issue by talking about heterosexuality being better than homosexuality.
Or more natural.
Or more natural, yeah, more natural.
There are times in the history of the church where even heterosexuality is maybe natural, but we want to get rid of nature as we ascend to the higher levels of spirituality and get rid of the body. There's been a negative attribution to the body in the history of the Christian tradition.
Well, there were more Mormon women than there were men, so the men took more women as wives.
Is that natural?
Kept the women in the wives. The men are very happy about it.
Sure they were.
The women were.
Well, in some cases, some places in southern Utah, polygamy is still being practiced, and I read an article by one of the wives who was a lawyer, practicing lawyer, who gave about 10 good reasons why she liked the situation. I'm just reporting that it's not universally.
I know one of them is one of the top wives in town.
Good. Well, the discussion here isn't about polygamy, it's about homosexuality.
I mean, that's just the way they settle that problem. Uh-huh. The women, the poor women that needed care.
I think there was more to it than that. I think that probably there was some male, what do we call it, dominance there going on as well.
Well, if in the introduction to Copper Woman of the Native Americans on Southern Vancouver Island, she says it depends on who's writing the history. Because they practice polygamy. If the men write it, they say, I had five wives. If the women write it, they say, well, we five got together and couldn't form one.
So, well, anyway, we can get off on polygamy too. The issue is what's natural, and again, what's natural seems a bit ambiguous to a lot of people.
What's natural for one may not be natural for another.
I think one thing with respect to scriptures and this day is that the overwhelming evidence seems to be not only is it not just homosexual or heterosexual, but in an incredible continuum.
Mm-hmm.
There's even the fact that some people are willing to say no one is completely heterosexual. And no one is completely homosexual. But there is this continuum. And it's also pretty, at least from, maybe it's my own bias, what I want to believe, but that it is clearly not a choice. It is something that is given to you. And my own sense of things is sexuality, regardless of orientation, is God's good gift to humankind. And I came to this because I'm interested in the ordination aspect of it. And what at least the Lutheran Church is asking, and from my point of view, if sexuality, and even the Lutheran Church is saying that it's okay to be gay or lesbian as long as you're celibate, and then you can be ordained. If in fact we recognize sexuality, regardless of orientation, as God's good gift to humankind, then what sort of question is that? What sort of thing is that to ask of someone? To you in particular, have to deny this good gift in order to serve God's people in the sacrament. It makes absolutely no sense to me.
That is, if you hold certain ideas about sin and what the Bible says on it and things like that, the other side holds different views on that, and that's the rub of the problem, none of the problem. Frequently they hold that there's a certain formula that's used, which is celibacy and singleness. Basically it amounts to only place where sexuality can be practiced legitimately is in a marriage situation. And they hold that as a kind of rule. Anything that violates the rule is wrong. Again, the various views of sin, a rule versus a relational understanding of human sin. What time is it? We got 10 minutes. We've only covered one or two people in this case. I think maybe I'll try to abandon going through the people in the case. Are there any of the remarks, however, that some of the individuals made that you would like to comment on? Just to maybe summarize what some of these were, Patty Becker we talked about. Dennis Bench was the character who was most in favor of this, talking much about on the next page in the case about a more universal orientation. One of the members of the session, Alberto Tarver, talked about the natural law, which we've discussed. Two of them, Jane Weller and Alice Royal, said, well, basically, let's brush it under the rug. I don't know why we're making such a big to-do. If we just let them everything be, everything will be hunky-dory. We really ought to address this issue. Then there were the two gay men, Morris West and Jake Owens. Their viewpoint on the resolution is not altogether clear, but one could probably surmise that from who they are and what they say. And finally, one that I think is one we haven't discussed is Millie Stewart says that it violates church law. And the argument there is, for some people, persuasive. If you live in a church with a democratic process and the majority of the people in the church deem that being homosexual is not to be, then one should go along and work through the process to overturn that law. In the meantime, you do what the church does. In other words, to pass this resolution is basically to break the law, and breaking the law is nothing that you should do lightly or at all. That is another argument that's heard in this case. Okay. Do you want to comment on any of those perspectives?
Jane Weller, I saw her comment as being a little bit different, perhaps, and I have to put myself in the category of having known homosexuals and yet in the recent years, it seems like there's been more of a tendency to, well, the coming out of the closet, I guess, but it seems to go a little beyond that. If to a sense, it almost seems like it's being flaunted. And in some cases, they're demanding special treatment because they are homosexuals. They want their own church service, or they want this or that to set them saw it even more as somehow a special group. And perhaps that's the one thing that many people have tried to defeat about, is not the fact that there is a homosexual ban, but the push to become a somehow privileged part of it.
But is that not due to the fact that they're not accepted in what's considered the heterosexual church?
I don't know.
Very easily, I would say it could be. You know,
I just heard a lot of people express much more strongly what you said, which is to the effect that they're flaunting it, and the whole display and the pressure is too much for them. I don't know what to quite make of those arguments.
All of our advertising industry flaunts heterosexuality.
That's true. We don't talk about that because
it bothers us a bit.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
It just seems to me when you talk about church law as being important, it just I can't help thinking of Jesus and how he was trying to get across that the whole point of everything is not the legalistic end, but the love, and let love be your aim. I mean, this is, and if the churches could just look at their laws and see how many of them are really Christian, how many are Pharisaical.
Mm-hmm. Of course, for some people who oppose you, that's a two-edged sword. They're just saying this is against God's will. Law maybe, but this is wrong.
Basically, probably because they say, I'm this way, therefore you must be wrong.
Yeah. We're dealing, by the way, also with, you know, that word homophobia.
Yeah.
There is a considerable study on that. That is the irrational hatred of homosexuals, which I think, from my own experience, colors my view. I'm a heterosexual, and I was brought up in a very anti-homosexual milieu. The boys' locker room in high school football, my God, call someone a fairy or something like that, you better be able to fight or run. And I was brought up with an extremely biased perspective on homosexuals. And though rationally I'm able to overcome that as part of my own socialization, it's something inside of me. When someone says to me that I'm gay or lesbian, now I start looking at them as gay and lesbian rather than as a person. And I have to check that tendency in myself all the time. Not seeing them as a person like any other person, but they're what the one facet of their whole makeup is isolated as the defining capacity. That's homophobia. And so that's part of me. And I think it's part of a lot of people.
That's
not something you just say, get rid of rationally, because it's part of the way you were brought up. And I think a lot of us have that.
Well, most of us we've had heterosexual modeling.
Sure.
And so it's, to us, that's natural. And if that comes into conflict, an identity conflict, because I don't feel comfortable with this, then we have a tendency as a church, as a matter of fact, to say, then you're wrong and you're right.
Well, that's where, why homophobia, it's a negative term, it's a phobia.
Yeah.
And I think that's what occurs. People take their feelings on the subject and do the therefore trip, you know.
Unfortunately, before we've met the person.
Sure.
If we know.
Precisely what I'm saying.
Yeah. I guess my first encounter that I was aware of that I was with some people that were homosexual was in a workshop that I went to. It was a weekend workshop. There was a lot of small group, a lot of intimate sharing. And I met some people there I had never met before, because it was in Seattle, I live in Tacoma. It was the most wonderfully caring.
Mm-hmm.
It was set up that way. It was the most wonderfully caring group. I met people, and you know, 2 days later, when the homosexuality came out, to me that was not important. I had met them as persons. And I think that's one of the things we have we as the heterosexuals have a tendency to do is homophobia seems to reign because we haven't met them as persons first.
Now, there's one difficulty here if you are for this resolution of calling your opponents homophobic. Do you know what an ad hominem argument is? An ad hominem argument is to the person. It means to the person.
Character.
Yeah, you give me a good argument and I say, oh, you're just a fool, or you're a communist. And immediately the discussion's over.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's an ad to the person.
10 years of therapy and you'll come around.
Yeah, you'll come around to my way when you've been strict. But to say, go up to someone and say, oh, you're just homophobic is not a very good way to discuss the situation. It's a way of closing off dialogue. Mm-hmm. But I think that's why I try to approach it when I discuss this by discussing my own feelings about this. Because
Well,
that can be, people can identify with that, I think. Wait a second, yeah.
One
Mary.
Difficulty I have is that there's a lack of a structure. You get married and that's a rite of passage, you stay in front of the community, and everyone knows that, who he is and who she is.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in my own church right now, the pastor has moved his friend into the rectory. And I think that there's a difficulty with knowing, well, how do we treat this person? There's not an openness. I mean, I understand that if there were an openness, there would be probably a firestorm. But I would appreciate a community where there could be some, I'm saying homosexual marriage, but some kind of acknowledgement and public statement so you knew how to deal with these, with arrangements.
We have a case study on that, by the way. My wife wrote it. She is a pastor in a Lutheran congregation in Omaha for 7 years. And this a woman came and asked for her to perform a marriage. And the case study is about that situation. It's an interesting issue, and I think you're exactly right.
They were doing that in Seattle last week. They were acknowledging gay couples. They were going before the court and acknowledging they were gay.
Well, that's situation is now well established, and the churches are reacting.
Go through that, 2 years ago perhaps? It lasted maybe about a year, and then just like it was a full-blown church commitment in front of
the beautiful service.
Nice ceremony, and it was,
One of the ways of dealing with that that my wife presses is that probably the best thing to do is not to call a marriage.
It wasn't a
recognition.
It was called a commitment.
Something like that, rather than getting mixed up with the traditional ideas so heavily.
Not a commitment, just like some marriages are not a marriage, I guess.
Right.
Do you suppose some of our attitudes about homosexuals are all we know is what we see in movies, read in books, see on the news, and you see kind of the, if you will, the kinky side of it.
Yeah, you see the worst on the news. Gay parades.
You see the worst that there is, and so that you think they're all that way.
Yeah.
And you don't stop to think that there may be some very caring people around you that you have no idea, and that they are homosexual.
Of course, if we look at the portrayal of heterosexuality, see
the
movies having men hitting on women all over the
place.
And we don't charge heterosexuality with that, isn't it?
No matter what you're doing, there's a weird element.
Yeah.
But we're talking here about good people.
Yeah, there's weird elements in heterosexuals, there's weird elements in homosexuals, no doubt about it.
A few years ago, my daughter became a lesbian couple. She had been married and divorced. And it's a long-term relationship, and I've met many of my friends who are lesbians, and some of them have been together for years and years. I mean, really, they're in their late middle ages,
I understand, and I don't have any evidence supporting this, but I understand from some feminists that there is a new category of lesbian, which is by choice, as a feminist statement. Whether or not they're heterosexual or homosexual.
And some of these people, to get back to the ones that are sort of more aggressive. Some of these friends of hers are out to try to get things changed, and others are just, like my daughter, just, this is the way we live, and it's a loving relationship with us.
Can our income tax situation affect this in a way, because, you know, we've got now this earned income credit for a single person with a child can draw so much money, then we have better exemption for married couples.
Oh, we haven't addressed that one yet. It's coming though. Well, the pension plans, does your homosexual spouse qualify under the pension plan?
Or your health plan.
Yeah, health plan.
That's one of the reasons why places like Seattle have registries, not to call them marriages, of homosexual partners, is because that official declaration then makes the partner eligible for the fringe benefits.
Right. Well, people are exiting, and I think we better hold to our one-hour covenant. Let me just say one more thing. I'm not going to ask for a vote in this case because I think I know how it will come out.
You do?
Yeah, pretty much.
How do you think it will come out?
Well, there are eight left. I'd say it would be six to two or seven to one.
I was surprised.
Just wait, people talk.
You mean against homosexuality?
For this resolution. Maybe unanimous, I don't know.
I was surprised that what he was being, what he wanted to be in the session, whatever, is a lifetime. Isn't that the way I read that in the book?
You're ordained to a session. You serve a 3-year term. But once you're ordained, you're always...
Oh, it's a lifetime ordination,
yeah.
But you only serve the three... Okay.
And you can come back on after some time. Let me just say one thing about the votes that I've taken with my students at PLU. I don't pretend that this is a scientific vote or anything like that. But it is interesting that men, when I have them vote on this, that the men students are about 50-50 division in my class. Now, I'm known for my liberal sentiments, so I draw liberal students. If it's 50-50 among the men in my students, probably more against in the larger student body. On the other hand, women vote about 2 or 3 to 1 in favor of this resolution, at least in my classes. Again, this is not a scientific cross-section. Mm-hmm. But one of the reasons I have students vote is to... This almost, a couple times it hasn't held, particularly when there's only a few men in this class or something like that. But it's held often enough to be illustrative that women seem to be more open to this resolution than men are.
And they threatened, is this the...
Well, I then open it up because it's a men-women issue at this point. Why is it that women seem to be, at least on the basis of these votes that I've taken, more open to this resolution than the men are? And I do about 15 minutes of discussion of that. And I think it is. I think women, like homosexuals, have been oppressed in this society or seen themselves in marginal or second-class status, and they can understand the way these people feel. There's not nearly the socialization, homophobic socialization among females as there is among males. You can go on to 4 or 5 reasons why men have more trouble with this sort of thing than women do.
Well, it's interesting, in all the years that we have had young people at our house with traveling athletic groups or LYE teams or singing groups, I always tell them I can take 4 girls or 2 boys. I have 2 double beds. Girls will sleep together. Boys will not. And if they bring a sleeping bag, one of them's on the floor.
Well, one of the things illustrative of this is, in this group, how many more women showed up for this session than males did.